Paul Plakas joins us once again. Paul, how are you?
Great, Jason. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. Now, it's very good that what our topic is, because we were talking about extra time and if soccer ever went to play until a goal was scored type of deal. And there was a recent article talking about how the brain is the big component that controls fatigue levels in the body, where a lot of people always thought that it was the muscles that fatigued. And this new study says it's not?
Yeah, I saw the article in the journal on Monday, and it referred to some research I checked out where, traditionally we thought, when your body gets tired, what happens is when the demand of the exercise is greater than your body's ability to produce energy for your muscles to contract, your muscles start to fatigue. So basically what happens is, if depending on your fitness level, how hard you're going, your body will manufacture this stuff called ATP, which is like an energy source for your muscles to perform muscular contractions. So when you're asking your body to work beyond its physical fitness level, your body is going to get in an anaerobic state, and slowly you start getting tired, your muscles can't contract as much, your heart rate's too high, you get these waste products built up, and basically your body will either slow down or shut down. Now what they're saying is that the brain is now a bigger component to this fatigue than we traditionally thought. And the brain's basically sending signals to the rest of your body saying, hey, you're working too hard, you're overheating, your muscles are contracting too intensely, your heart rate's extremely elevated. Slow down to protect itself, because it's thinking it's in a state of anxiety, stress, and shock, right? So what they're doing now at elite level athletes is they're trying to override those signals to the brain. And they're saying the guys that are able to override those signals to the brain can perform longer than their opponents. So a lot of their, some research on some of these cyclists, and they use a mantra saying, hey, my legs aren't tired, no fatigue, no pain. You know, it's like in Rocky here, where that scene, he goes, no pain, no pain, that kind of thing.
Paul, the interesting thing to me about that is, where's the line, though? I mean, if you want to finish a marathon at the same pace you finished or began it at, you may kill yourself. Now, I understand the willingness to push, but at some point, if you're finding ways to trick your brain and get around that, is there a danger there?
Well, you know what? I would think there would be, absolutely. I'm not suggesting this for everybody, but more like a seasoned athlete who kind of knows their body, or who's like somebody who trains fairly intensely in races, kind of knows what their body's able to do. And maybe they got half a kilometer to go, a kilometer to go, and to push that little extra bit to maybe beat somebody who's side by side. They're saying that if you can override those brain signals better than your opponent, you've got a chance. That's really what separates victory at a higher level. So I think it's okay for some people if they know their body, but you definitely have to be careful, without a doubt.
Now, that raises the image for me, and I wish I knew the athlete's name. I'm sure it's happened more than once, but there's that famous bit of video of that poor woman lurching and staggering into the stadium from pillar to post. That's an elite athlete. She's right. Already clearly gone too far. Do you really want to go farther than that?
Yeah, at that point, I don't think you physically can. What's happened is that their body's completely depleted of glycogen. There's no more calories to burn. So it wouldn't even matter if you could override the signals for the brain, because you basically have no sugars to burn as a fuel source for the muscles to contract. So I'm kind of talking about the point where you still can go, but the pain is so excruciating. Your brain's saying, stop, stop, stop. This is too painful. It hurts too much. Give up, give up. Because everybody has that when they're in a race. They're thinking, what the hell am I doing here? This is painful. This hurts too much. But if you can kind of get a little mantra going where, you still physically feel fine, but you're just in a state of discomfort, it can help you kind of keep going.
Paul Plakas joins us from Custom Fit. Now, Paul, the produce ATP, the energy source to allow for muscle contractions, which is obviously what you need. How do you can you decrease or increase that ATP level?
You can increase the rate of production based on your fitness level, for sure. So if you've got a higher level of cardiovascular aerobic power, if you've got a higher percentage of, depending on what activity you're doing, if it's fast twitch muscle fibers for sprinting type activities, or forward twitch fibers for endurance stuff, a fitter body can definitely develop more ATP, or it takes more workload for fatigue to be created to occur in the body. so that it can be trained. But it's got to be gradual. You got to let your body adapt to that level of intensity and training. And then after it's adapted, then you push it a little bit more. But it's got to be gradually, so your body has time to adapt, so you can avoid overtraining and injury and hurting yourself.
And I want to go back to the overriding the signals from the brain. I guess that would go to the term that's used a lot, willpower, you know, the guys who are mentally tough and all that sort of. So isn't it still kind of your brain in a sense? It's almost like the brain's tricking itself, or you're convincing the brain to do what you want.
Yeah, I think you're basically trying to convince the brain that there's no pain, you can deal with it, you're okay, you're still going to be able to finish, don't give up, that kind of thing. It's just that the research shows that the fatigue levels are now, they think, more and more associated a little with that than it is with the traditional, you know, lack of glycogen, lack of ATP production, that kind of stuff. I just found it kind of interesting that, we can manipulate the brain, and the people that are able to do that better tend to win more so than the people who are not able to do that. Even though their fitness levels are pretty well the same, that kind of separates the two elite level athletes.
Now, this ATP, do we produce the same amount naturally, or is there a wide range that's affected by how much you train if you're an elite athlete compared to a couch potato who's saying, come on,
yeah,
just two more stairs till I make it to the bathroom kind of guy like me? Or
Without a doubt, first of all, your genetics is going to determine a little bit of that. Your level of fitness, how conditioned you are, how much you're used to the activity. Because if you're very efficient at something and you're very comfortable doing it, and somebody else is new to something, they're going to produce, you're not going to need as much ATP because you're very efficient. Your muscles contract more fluidly than somebody else would. And then when you start getting to fatigue levels, the person that has been conditioned and used to those levels of fatigue for longer and have that base level of fitness and has worked at that higher intensity level will be able to produce it and longer than somebody else who's not as conditioned.
Well, I've read a few studies, and I know you've focused on this for 20 years. Have you ever seen one, like, of all the big sports, from tennis to soccer to football to hockey, basketball? Obviously, you know, the contact sports take a different level of conditioning, but is there one that requires an athlete to push themselves more than others?
I don't think so. Like, every sport's got their own element of difficulty to it. Like, there's some sports that require a lot of duration, like a triathlon or an Ironman. Like, you're coming off the bike 180 kilometers, and then now you got to convince your brain that you got to run 26 more miles. And that's kind of hard to deal with at that point. So what you got to do there is deal with it in short-term blocks. Okay, let's get to mile one marker and see how I feel, and get to mile two. You got to separate and block it off. When you're playing a sport like hockey, when you've got a 45-second shift, you've got to basically say that I've got to give it everything I've got in this shift efficiently, and then recover so that I can do it again. And it's, I think at that level, sometimes when you have loose pucks and you're battling in the corner and your legs are done, and you think, is there one last lunge? Is there one last reach I can do to get that puck away from the opponent? And I know I'm going to be spent, then get to the bench. You know, some guys are barely crawling to the bench after a hard shift like that. I think that's going to separate those little inches of the game from winning and losing.
Paul, always good to catch up with you. Sorry that Greece wasn't able to get to the final like you hoped.
Yeah, maybe next 4 years, I guess. I don't know.
Take it easy, Paul. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.